KFW meteorologist.
Are you ready?
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Which is real energy, not intermittent wind. Darling, I'd like to watch the president on television tonight. Honey, I don't think we'll be able to. The wind is not blowing.
Welcome to the Lars Larson Show. And yeah, that's Donald Trump answering questions about the kind of energy that Democrats would like America to run on. Wind energy, solar energy, not at all even adequate to supply the needs of a modern industrialized country. And I want to tell you some of the implications of that here in the Pacific Northwest. But before I do that, I'll let you know that at this hour, we're following developments in Harford County, Maryland, where there has been another shooting at another school. This one in a bathroom. We don't know the circumstances. We'll get details as they're available. And I'll also be asking you about the events in Georgia this week, in Winder, Georgia, where four people died after a school shooting. A suspect, 14 years old, in custody, was arraigned in court today to face four charges of murder in adult court, even though he's 14 years of age. And that makes it particularly appropriate today's X-Poll question, which we try to make out of the news of the day so that it's as fresh as possible. Should parents who place guns in the hands of juvenile killers face criminal charges as well? Now, my answer to that would be yes. I know that some of my Second Amendment friends are not going to like that. I've always advocated for the legal and lawful use of firearms. If somebody uses a gun illegally, they should be charged with a crime that is appropriate. And in this case, since the parent of Colt Gray, the young 14-year-old who's been accused of murder, four counts of murder, may in fact be given the death penalty, may in fact go to prison for life with or without the possibility of parole, his father has also been charged because his father, more than a year ago, about 15 months ago, was questioned by the FBI about alleged threats that his son, Colt Gray, was alleged to have made against a middle school, saying that he might shoot the middle school up. Colt Gray denied it to the FBI. His father said, no, I don't think he did it either. I'll play you some of that interview just a little bit later on today. But his father has now been charged with manslaughter in connection with the same case. And this is very reminiscent of the case that happened earlier this year, or the convictions earlier this year, of two parents in the state of Michigan for putting a gun in the hands of a juvenile who then took the gun to school and killed people, and they are now sitting in prison as well. So I'd ask you this. Should parents who place guns in the hands of juvenile killers face charges as well? My answer is yes. The X poll can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, my website. It's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Now, yesterday, I asked you this. Now that Hunter Biden has pleaded guilty to tax crimes, will Daddy pardon him? I said yes. 92% of you said yes. It still remains to be seen whether or not Joe Biden will stick to his promise that he does not plan to pardon Hunter Biden. He'll probably wait it out till the last day because he's not going to be president after January of next year. And then he'll probably issue the pardon just in time. Although there might be a plus to the capo of the Biden crime family, Joe, knowing that Hunter, who's been nothing but trouble, it sounds like, most of his life, is locked up somewhere and can't cause any more problems for the Biden crime family. So do I still believe that Joe Biden may pardon him? Yes. Do I expect to hear about it much from the mainstream media, who ought to be putting a drumbeat of questions on Joe Biden? Will you absolutely assure Americans that you're not going to do that with the authority you still have for the next few months? But let me get back to wind energy, because I want to tell you that just over a month from now, the Federal Bureau of Ocean Energy Management plans to auction off leases off the Oregon coast, and the leases are for wind energy. Now, you might think that's absolutely fantastic. If the technology works and it pencils out, I'm completely fine with it. The problem is, the technology does not work. And I'm going to give you a current example. And the example involves a brand new wind turbine off the east coast of America that literally simply fell apart. And if you say, Lars, did it fall apart because it was old? It was about 6 months old when a couple of months ago, this wind turbine, and this thing is a massive machine, one of about 65 placed off the coast of Nantucket. And the fact is, the thing hadn't been there but months, and it simply blew apart. Now, how big is it? 850 feet tall at the top of the top blade as the blade reaches the peak of its arc. These are gigantic machines. They spin at a speed that puts the tip of that blade at about 190 miles an hour as it whirls around and generates energy. And this one was brand new. Now, guess what? When the federal BOEM leases or auctions off those leases on the 15th of October, one of the companies that is signed up for this is a Spanish electric utility called Iberdrola. It is co-owner of the Vineyard Wind Project that is off the coast of Massachusetts. So what's significant about them? They own the wind turbine that simply flew apart. And if you say, well, it probably won't happen here. Well, maybe not. But let me tell you this. A brand new wind energy farm, 65 turbines off the coast of Massachusetts, and one of them just simply fell apart. And what does the company say is the cause of that? The company actually has identified it is because of either manufacturing or engineering flaws, meaning they built it wrong or they designed it wrong, and then they decided to put it off the coast of Massachusetts, and the thing just simply came apart. 6 to 8 beaches were contaminated by all the fiberglass, the carbon fiber, the foam, and all the other debris that came from the massive blades. These blades are 300 feet long. They weigh tons. They spin at an incredible speed, and they designed it wrong? Can you imagine? And that's a possibility off the state of Oregon, maybe even off the state of Washington. But they are planning all kinds of wind farms without having the technology in such a state that it can actually survive simply operating. It did not fall apart in a hurricane. It did not fall apart in a big windstorm. It just simply blew itself apart because either they designed it wrong, they made it wrong, it was flawed from the beginning, and one of the same companies that is the co-owner of the Vineyard Wind Project is actually involved in this. Now, let me go back to that Trump soundbite. Joel, would you mind rolling that?
Which is real energy, not intermittent wind. Darling, I'd like to watch the president on television tonight. Honey, I don't think we'll be able to. The wind is not blowing.
Now, you know that Kamala Harris actually has this soundbite on one of her websites. She's mocking Donald Trump, President Trump, because he says wind energy might actually leave us in the dark. The fact is, it will. And why? Because it's true. The wind doesn't blow all the time. Well, then you go to your backup supplies. You know what America's current backup supplies are? Coal-fired energy that the Greens have said we will put out of business. And here in the Northwest, they're already cutting off wind energy. Centralia power plant powered by coal shut down. Boardman coal plant shut down. 10 more plants from other states outside the Northwest that supply energy to the Northwest, those are being turned aside as well. And natural gas? Well, according to the Greens, natural gas is off limits too. And we're going to hitch our future to a kind of technology that's not even ready for prime time? I don't think so. Welcome to First Amendment Friday. Your phone calls and emails are welcome. The Northwest Nonsense is coming up next.
Before you are, weeding out the right from the wrong. This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense? nonsense.
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
You know, I truly hate to complain about this, but lately my hand starts to cramp up when I write down the list of all the failed policies of single-party rule in the Northwest. Head Start or pre-K for all doesn't really make a damn bit of difference in the education of kids, according to the best university studies that have ever been done on the subject. It amounts to very expensive daycare. But since it produces more unionized public employees and votes, the Democrat Party absolutely loves it, and they'll take all your money to fund it, and they're trying to do that right now. Only now, Multnomah County has decided the taxes that it takes to pay for this so-called free daycare drives thousands of wage earners to flee from where? Multnomah County and King County as well. So they're putting those taxes off, but only temporarily. Washington's Jay Inslee demanded that the state's ferry system convert to non-existent electric ships. That crashed on the shore badly, so those who needed the boats to get home got stuck on the dock waiting for Jay's ship to come in. Jay is just counting the days till he collects his two fat pensions, one from the state and one from the federal government for the fine, fine job that Jay Inslee's always done. Legalizing hard drugs killed thousands of people in the Northwest. Oregon found out that simply inviting addicts to take treatment did absolutely nothing. So now that we have the softest possible threat of jail for hard drugs lawmakers could possibly engineer, already at least some people are going into treatment. Now just imagine if we went back to real criminal consequences for drugs and got most of the people into treatment. That's the way it used to work. Oh, and that orange air that far too many people in the Northwest are breathing on these hot days during all these summertime fires. We know how to stop that, too, but logging fell out of fashion, so we best get used to it. Glad to get your calls. I've actually got a couple of naysayers, and I'm anxious to get to those at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
Well, public financing for city council candidates has once again turned into a disaster for the city of Portland. Seems some of the candidates, and they are named, were too lazy to go out and find enough people to voluntarily donate to their campaigns so they could qualify for the taxpayer funding of politics. So some of them solicited money from other candidates, allegedly, with the promise that they would make a return contribution. That is illegal. In fact, it's a state felony crime to offer up such a quid pro quo. The punishment for that crime, 5 years in prison and a fine of $125,000. But please don't hold your breath waiting for the current Oregon Secretary of State to act on these blatant violations of the law. I'll give full credit to Willamette Week's Sophie Peel, who broke this story, named the candidates suspected of violating the law to qualify their campaigns for public financing. The candidates who exchanged emails about trading donations between August 7th and August 9th, a two-day period, Chad Likens, Michael DiNapoli, Michael Trimble, and District 4, Sam Sachs in District 2, three others in the email chain, Theo Sainer, Kelly Janes, Thomas Shervey, invited donations from fellow candidates, but did not explicitly agree to swap donations. It'll be interesting to see if any of them want to talk about it. They are invited to come on this show anytime they like. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk at LarsLarson.com. Jim writes in, Lars, if the group in Portland can sue the city and win under the ADA Act for camping, why can't the state be sued under a similar situation for poor air quality directly related to lack of forest management? Just a thought as I'm choking on the smoke in Central Oregon, signed Jim. Now to your calls. Let's start with Matt, who's a naysayer. Hey, Matt, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about on this First Amendment Friday?
Hey, Lars. I love your show.
Thank you, sir.
First time ever calling. So this whole thing you talk about, you know, the parents should be thrown in jail, too, if the kid takes a gun to school and shoots somebody. I'm having problems with that because, you know, the same kid could have gone to school and his baseball coach hands him a baseball bat, says, you've done so great lately, man. Here's his bat for the game today. Kid loses it. He goes into a classroom and kills the teacher with a baseball bat. Should the coach be thrown in prison, too, for life?
No. And I'll tell you a couple of things that are missing. And all of this, ultimately, you can have whatever law you want on the books that say the parents are responsible if they put the gun in the hands of the kids, if they create the circumstances and give them the instrument with which they do it. Your example, the coach, if you've got a great baseball player and you give him a bat as an award for being the best baseball player on the team, do you reasonably expect that he will take the baseball bat out and beat somebody to death? No, you don't. In this case, the father, I think, is charged mostly because 15 months ago, the FBI came to his house and said, "We hear your son has been making threats to shoot up the middle school, and we want to know what's going on. Does he have access to guns?" The dad said, "Yes." "Does he have access to guns?" "Yes." And then they talked to the kid. And at the end of the interview, and I'll play a bit of it later, the cop even says, "Well, you're saying you didn't do it, but you know, people do lie to the police." I don't think the cop believed the kid. Now, I don't know if they shared all this with the school, but could you have reasonably foreseen as a father, the cops, the FBI are asking about my son and whether or not he's made threats to shoot up a school? Would you have picked an AR-15 for your son for Christmas, and would you leave it available to him for easy use?
I guess that would be a choice in life that I would make.
You wouldn't make?
Well, I'd make or not make, but it would be my choice.
No, but I'm asking you an opinion. You see, Matt,
I totally get what you're saying.
Don't dodge it. Would you give it kind of...
I'm not dodging it. I'm not sure how to answer that question.
Well, hold on. I'm making it simple. Somebody has come to you and said, "Your son has been making threats to shoot up his school." And you say, "Well, I don't think he did it." And the kid denies it, but I would expect the kid to deny it. Do you give him a gun 7 months later and allow him to have easy access to it?
And there's all these circumstances on that. You got the possibility maybe the kid's father absolutely believes him, and everybody believes, "No, I never did that. It wasn't me." And so
You're dodging it, though. You've got to say yes or no. You'd either give him the gun or you wouldn't. You'd either lock up your guns or you wouldn't. It's one or the other. It's a binary choice. You would say, "No, leave the guns unlocked. Leave the kid to have easy access to it. Maybe the cops are right. Maybe he did threaten his middle school." If I leave a gun accessible to a kid who's threatened a middle school, what could possibly go wrong? And I think that's what's the case.
Or a baseball bat to any kid.
Or a baseball bat. Yeah, or any of those things.
The AMPM is the AMPM at fault.
You're giving me all these other scenarios. I'm giving you real life. This man bought a gun for his kid who was suspected by the FBI and the police of threatening his middle school. And guess what? 15 months later, he went to his high school because he had moved from middle school to high school, and he killed 4 people and wounded 9. Now, didn't life give that father a warning? And if he didn't take the warning and say, "I'm going to secure those guns just in case my son isn't telling the truth," he didn't do it. And now he's facing manslaughter charges. That's the logic behind the law. It's First Amendment Friday. It's the Radio Northwest Network. And Matt, you're a great naysayer. 866-439-5277 on the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Wherever and whenever you want it. Get the podcasts all day, every day at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday, live on the Radio Northwest Network, and it's a pleasure to be with you. Our ex-poll question today: should parents who place guns in the hands of juvenile killers face charges as well? There's a Georgia dad right now who's facing manslaughter charges because of the murders that his son is accused of. Now, his son has a right to his day in court. He's going to be tried as an adult. I do want to mention parenthetically that here in the Pacific Northwest, Colt Gray probably would have been in Oregon. He certainly would have been charged as a juvenile, and that would be wrong. And he would face juvenile consequences, also wrong. But there you go. That's the decision of some of the nitwits who are running the system. Oh, and one other update. Donald Trump's sentencing on the so-called hush money case has now been put off until after the election, although I think the judge's current legal problems may have something to do with that, but we'll get into that later. Mark Harmsworth joins me now, who's director of the Small Business Center at Washington Policy. Mark, I hope you're having a nice Friday.
It's a great day here in the Pacific Northwest, Lars.
Let me ask you this. You and I have talked about housing a lot because housing is a business as well. And we've watched from a distance, I hope, as California has absolutely driven itself off a cliff. The average cost of building housing for the homeless in Los Angeles is about $1 million a unit. Now, you say it can't possibly cost that much in materials and labor. And you say, no, an awful lot of that is government. And now it seems that there are Northwest governments that are making the same kind of mistake, just on a much smaller scale. Let's start with the city of Snohomish.
Yeah, what's happened here is the Washington State Legislature passed legislation last year that enables you to build what's called an accessory dwelling unit, which is a small building on your property, and they've relaxed some of the zoning laws to help with increasing affordable housing. Well, they've never really described how to do fee structures for this, so some of the cities have been creating their own street fee structures, and in the case of the city of Snohomish in Washington, what they've decided to do is require a sewer and water hookup to this structure, even though it may only be 800, 900, or 1,000 square feet, small one-bedroom apartment that could be hooked into and has been in the past hooked into the existing sewer water system of these homes. So they've requiring it now to have its own utility connection, which can be 20,000 and more, depending on the size of the water line that's going onto the property. It can even be as high as $50,000. And some of these units only cost $40,000, $50,000 to actually build in materials. So the city is effectively adding a 25 to a 50% fee to the cost of building one of these small affordable housing units.
Now, here's the thing I don't understand, Mark. Every single public official on either side of the political aisle is screaming about how we need more housing. In fact, you've got the nitwit governor of Oregon, Tina Kotek, saying, I promise I will double or triple the amount of housing that's built in the state. And then the first thing they do is say, and we're going to adopt a whole bunch of rules and regulations and fees that make building more housing less likely than ever. How does that, do they have any explanation for that?
No, it's ridiculous what they're doing, because even the state ecology folks and the other folks that look at this, they're saying, hey, yeah, you can hook up to an existing water line. I mean, the whole point of these is that they're affordable. The city of Snohomish specifically has had a lot of trouble with its sewer over the years. It forgot to collect a bunch of mitigation fees just a few years ago, and it's also had several problems with this overall sewer system. And so I think they're just trying to recoup some of the costs that they've incurred through their own incompetence of building these systems. And they're trying to get some of this money back now through these ADUs, which just makes them so expensive.
You know, I want to tell you, Mark, I may have mentioned to you that both Tina and I built an ADU at one point. And I remember getting in an argument with the city about it. They said, well, it has to have its own separate sewer line and its own separate water line. I said, why? And they said, well, because someday you may sell it. And I said, apparently you haven't read your own rules. An accessory dwelling unit in almost, I think it's in every place in the state of Washington, has to be legally and otherwise attached, not physically, but legally attached to the house it's being built next to, meaning you can never sell it separately. In fact, in many cities, the city of Vancouver is one, you can't rent it. You can't rent it. You can't sell it. If that's the case, it's just like building a bedroom onto your house, except this doesn't happen to be attached to your house. What would be the possible justification of saying you must have separate sewer and water connections for an ADU that is forever legally attached to the house that it's built next to?
Well, the city, I think, other than just a flat-out money grab for more money, I think the city is saying that potentially it could be at some point separated in the future and sold separately. But you would deal with that issue at that point, not right now.
Yeah.
The other thing the city has also just received is a $3 million grant to improve their infrastructure, because one of the arguments that they made was that people have to pay their fair share when they get into the system. But to your point, it's just like adding a one-bedroom to your existing home if you did a remodel. Why would you pay the fee then? So it's ridiculous the city is charging this.
You know what I'd like to find out, Mark? Maybe you know the right people to ask, city of Snohomish. Ask them. Because I was told in no uncertain terms, if you build this ADU, It can never be deeded separately. It can never be sold separately. It may never be rented separately. Now, never, of course, can always be overturned by a court at some point if somebody decided to do that. But they said, when you build it, you're understanding this is forever locked to that house, period. End of story. If that's their rule, and then they say, oh, but it has to have its own separate water and sewer, it'd be like saying if you wanted to add a bathroom in your house, but the new bathroom, you know, because it's in your house, has to be attached to a whole separate water and sewer line. It makes no sense, and I agree with you. I think it's just a giant money grab. But we could make such a difference in the amount of housing that's built if the city governments and the counties and the state would simply say, let's loosen up the rules, the ones that don't have to do with life safety, and let's get more housing built by giving people an incentive. Build it in the next 2 years, none of these fees apply. And take all the fees and rules that don't seem to make sense, like a separate water and sewer for a piece of property, an ADU that's forever attached to the house, and say, that one doesn't make sense, let's get rid of it altogether. Do you think I'm spitting in the wind?
Lars, I think you sound like you've got some common sense on your shoulders and you need to run for city council.
Have you ever
honestly don't.
Have you ever read a book called The Death of Common Sense?
Yes, I have. That's
okay,
a long time ago.
And you'll have to correct me. I think one of them was a story about a guy who was on the city council or planning commission in Santa Barbara. And the city was trying to figure out what do we do with all these people who need housing, like single room occupancy housing. And he said, well, why? Well, it's going to cost us whatever the big number was then. It was a big enough number that nobody could afford it. And so he went, he was also a guy who was a developer, and he went to his architect and said, build me some safe, or design some safe housing. And he said, but throw the rule book out. Other than life safety, throw the rule book out. So his architect said, okay, designed it. He said, you can build these and rent them for what they cost to build, so that somebody who's on, you know, say a pension or Social Security or whatever, could live in it and pay rent on it, and it'll pay for itself. He took that back to the city council, and at least according to that book, the city council of Santa Barbara said, oh, you mean we could actually create housing for people that they, the people who live in it, could actually afford to pay for, even if they are Social Security, pension, or whatever? And he sold them on the idea. Can you imagine selling Washington or Seattle or Portland on the idea? Why don't you just change the rules, make it still safe for life safety, and make the people who live there pay the bill, and we can do this without any public money whatsoever? I think that would be the better way to approach it. Mark, thanks very much. That's Mark Harmsworth from the Washington Policy Center. I'll get to your phone calls and emails. We've got some great naysayers coming up. It's First Amendment Friday, and glad to get your calls at 866-439-5277. Naysayers always go to the head of the line on the Lars Larson Show. Check out our Instagram feed, and of course, you can always, don't ask Alexa about Kamala, but you can ask Alexa about the Lars Larson Show. Well, September's...
To all the wokey snowflakes, yes, you are probably going to be offended. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. Always glad to get your phone calls and your emails. This segment comes from 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. That's 540training.com. Let's go to Jim, who's a naysayer in Seattle, listening on the Radio Northwest Network and our great affiliate, KVI. Hey, Jim, what do you and I disagree about today that makes you a naysayer?
Well, whether capitalism can provide the needs and wants, mostly needs first, of the society. I listened to your commentary just about the businessmen in Snohomish. I would like to say I'm not familiar with the minutiae.
Businessmen? You mean the city of Snohomish telling people who wanted to have an ADU at their house? I don't know if that has to do with business,
right?
But,
like I'm saying, I'm not familiar with the minutia of all those dealings that you're talking about. But I can say from a video that's available on the internet, Michael Parenti,
I'm sorry, but the problem is when people get on the air and they talk like that, the fact is we're not going to let that happen. So thank you anyway, but I appreciate your call. Let's go to a real naysayer, Dan. Dan, what do you and I disagree about on this fine First Amendment Friday?
The parents being arrested for the kids having or getting access to guns.
Okay. Tell me why.
Okay. I 100% agree that this parent in particular should be charged, and probably ones like him. However, I also know that I live in Portland, and I can easily see that Mike Schmidt, if someone breaks in my home and I don't have one gun in one safe with the safety lock on it, one safe and the ammo in the second one, him going, well, obviously, it's almost as if you gave it to them, you should be charged with this crime.
No, hold on a second. They come into your house without a warrant, which is already going to give you a way out, and they say you have a gun that's not locked up, and they're now going to send you to prison for manslaughter. Who got killed in your scenario?
Well, no. If someone breaks into my home, a criminal, takes my weapon,
yes,
and then uses it in crime, and I didn't let them know within that, like, I think it's the 48-hour notice or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
after you became aware of it. It could happen in theory, but Dan, here's the safeguard, because all of these cases, and I always emphasize this to people, have to go to a jury. So the DA could be completely crazy, like Mike Schmidt for brains is. But then he has to go to 12 average people and say, I'm going to present this crazy case to you, and I want you to convict Dan of committing the crime. I don't think you're going to see parents charged. That we've now had two cases this year, or two cases. One was decided this year. The other one, you know, of course, is starting this year in Georgia. But you're going to have a circumstance in which you can persuade the jury that what Dad did was unreasonable, and that he could reasonably foresee that his son might act violently, if he had access to a gun. And I think we have that circumstance. But how often are you going to get that circumstance where Dad's already been questioned by the cops? Did your son make threats to shoot up the middle school? He says no. He says he doesn't think his kid did it. His kid says he didn't do it. And then 15 months later, he does exactly what he was suspected of making threats to do 15 months before. I don't think you're going to find those circumstances very often. And the Michigan case, we've talked about that plenty. That mom and dad were absolute idiots. They apparently ignored their kids. Mom was in love with riding horses, and she ignored her kids, and her kids really had problems. And then she decided to buy one of her kids a pistol. And then when she was called to the school, along with her husband, and the school said, hey, your kid's been drawing and writing some crazy stuff that suggests violence. What do you know about that? Did they say, well, we bought him a gun a few months ago, and if the school said, well, do you know where that gun is right now? They would have said no, because the gun happened to be in the kid's backpack. Those kinds of mistakes, wouldn't the sensible thing for the Georgia dad have been to say, you know, just I'm going to err on the side of caution, and I'm going to lock those guns up because my son isn't allowed to have that gun in his hands without either an adult supervising him or with my permission. So I'll lock them up. Like we lock up all kinds of things, don't we?
Hold on. Thank you for pointing that out and reminding me that even though Mike Schmidt's in charge, that he still has to get a pass the jury. So you have done it. You have gotten me from the half to the full. So I'm no longer an atheist. So thank you.
Okay, I appreciate it, Dan. Every once in a while we get a conversion. Let's go to Sean. Hey, Sean, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
I wanted to talk about it. I've been using this term to describe the party formerly known as Democrats, as far as I'm concerned, as evilcrats. Now, not all people who are holding office who are Democrats are evilcrats, but they all seem to describe.
Are you sure? Can you name one that you don't think? How about, let's see, Kathy Hochul? Is she evil? How about Gretchen Whitmer? How about Gavin Newsom?
Well, that's what I
If you're not going to say all of them aren't, then give me one good example of a truly wholesome Democrat out there.
Well, what I was saying is not all of them, I would say, are evilcrats, but they all subscribe to the same thing. They all subscribe to, quote, let no crisis go to waste.
True.
And there's a sentence missing there, and I would say I consider a sentence is missing there, and the response is, the evilcrats ask, what if there is no crisis? And evil replied, I will provide and teach you manufacturing.
Absolutely right. It's going right down Saul Alinsky's path. Sean, thanks so much for the call. Back in a moment. It's First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Crank that speaker.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I love First Amendment Fridays, and I will get back to your phone calls and emails, but I want to remind you of a story that kind of lit a fire a couple of weeks ago, and we didn't break it. Actually, I got it courtesy of a lot of you, because you sent me emails saying, how in the world, this was before the mainstream media picked it up, but how in the world is it that there is an organization called Hacienda that has taxpayer money, hundreds of thousands of dollars of it, and it's promising to hand out $30,000 in down payment assistance in Oregon for people to buy homes, but that it was specifically limited to only those people who are not American citizens. Now, it sounded illegal to me. It sounded unconstitutional to me. It was crazy. And, of course, Hacienda has now said, oh, that was just a typographical error. We accidentally said that Americans could not apply for it. But I think they're being creative in their truth-telling at best and probably lying at worst. But we've asked Hacienda to come on, and they won't come on. But who will come on is Oregon State Representative Lucetta Elmer, who's a Republican representing Oregon's District 24. Representative Elmer, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
How did this get approved?
Sneakily. That's how it got approved. I sit on the Economic Development Committee with Representative Bynum, and she had a bill that she was trying to, it was a committee bill that was trying to go through this year. And, you know, Rep Deal is also on that committee, and he was a real bulldog and going after it. And we heard it, but I don't even think we took a vote. Maybe we did. I don't think we did. So it didn't get out of committee. It didn't go anywhere. And, you know, we had LC, or, you know, we got a legal opinion on it, and we were told they didn't think it was constitutional. And it was about this equity investment program. And so it didn't go anywhere. Well, lo and behold, you know, after the fact, we hear about this, and it got buried in the Christmas tree bill on, you know, page 494 or something, I don't know. And there was money set aside, so, you know, for this. And it was sneaky, and, you know, I think that it was a way for the majority to avoid a very uncomfortable conversation and still get what they wanted.
Now, Bynum's quite a character, and I'd love to have her on the show, but she won't come on because she knows the questions I'd ask her, which would be polite but pointed. Why was it that Bynum thought it was appropriate to set money aside and then specifically say it can't be used to benefit anyone who's an American citizen? I don't understand that. In other words, illegal aliens would be eligible, green card holders would be eligible. Anybody who happens to be here but is not a citizen would be eligible, but American citizens would not be eligible. Why did she think that was, number one, even legal? And number two, why did she think that it was a good idea? Did she ever say?
You know, I can't speak for her, obviously. I have a good relationship with Bynum. But she, you know, well, she passed. She was one of the chief sponsors in 22. Now, that was before me, but that was her Economic Equity Investment Program, which was Senate Bill 1579, you know, equity-based beneficiary project. So that act right there, I think, is telling. I mean, she definitely thinks it's appropriate to have some funds being distributed based on, based on things that aren't necessarily fair, you know? So I think we saw the writing on the wall with that, or, you know, like I said, I wasn't there yet in 22, but that was definitely the foundation that was laid, and then continuing to try to get money to fund programs like this. And I mean, I think we were surprised when we heard it was for non-American citizens. But looking back, I guess I see that. Yeah, I think that is the agenda. Well, I would assume that she thinks that there's, you know, that it's helpful because there's wealth building opportunities and helping people out that need the help. But for non-American citizens, I mean, it's just crazy. It doesn't make sense.
Well, and let me ask you. And I'll carefully divide. There are two kinds of non-American citizens that are in America. Correct. In general. There are green card holders who are allowed to work. There are also non-green card holders that I refer to as illegal aliens, because I think that's the most accurate description. They can't work a job. So where's the equity in saying we're going to specifically exclude the majority of people, citizens, both brown and black and white and other kinds of citizens? We're going to exclude them from this equity, and we're going to include people who are brown and black and white, who are illegally in this country, who can't work a job. And I would assume that if you want to buy a house, no matter how much down payment you've got, you can't buy a house if you can't have a job. Right?
Yep, you are absolutely correct. And so, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe, they're saying now that it was a mistake and if that's not what it was supposed to say. And, you know, maybe the intent was that it was for the non-American citizens that can work, but I don't know.
Well, Rep. Elmer, let me ask you about that. I would call that a lie, but you tell me, was this money specifically put in with the intent that it would only be spent on non-citizens? Because Hacienda can say all they want. They say, oh, it was a typographical error. Somebody wrote the wrong thing. They wrote it several times in the appeal they made to people saying, apply for this program, but Americans are not eligible. Was that a typographical error, or was that a lie?
I don't know. Have you talked with Business Oregon?
I have called Business Oregon. I've called Hacienda. They will not talk. Neither will Bynum, who's now seeking a seat in Congress. So this dangerous woman with her dangerous ideas, illegal and unconstitutional ideas, is trying to get a seat in the Congress in the 5th District. So, yeah, I've asked them. No, they won't say. And what they do is they tell a bunch of, you know, softball-throwing reporters, oh, we just accidentally excluded American citizens in writing. And I'm just saying, right. What did the legislation say that finally approved the money?
I don't have the answer to that. I don't know. I mean, it didn't go through. It came through the Christmas tree bill this year. And so for that, you know, it was an appropriation that went to Business Oregon, I believe.
Business Oregon, by the way, right, for everybody listening, is a state agency. Hacienda is an NGO.
Right. Well, Lars, here's the thing. I mean, first of all, we got to keep Lori Chavez Dreamer in her seat. Yep. And second, you know, we have to come together and we have to fund these seats that are winnable so we can flip some seats and we can actually make some real progress. And we don't have these crazy outlandish bills passing or money being distributed for crazy reasons. It's so frustrating for me as a first-time legislature to get in there and to see all this work that I would love to do, and our hands are tied, you know?
Well,
I mean, we're out of the super minority, which is great.
If you just say Janelle Bynum has proposed illegal, unconstitutional, racist ideas and attached $700,000 of the taxpayers' money to it, I think you'd give even a hardcore Democrat pause about voting for Janelle Bynum. That's Lucetta Elmer. She represents Oregon's 24th legislative district. Ms. Elmer, thank you very much. I appreciate the time. Coming up, what we know today about the shooting in Georgia that took 4 lives in a murder. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Of the people.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
In essence, you're charged with four counts of felony murder. So for each count, the maximum penalty is that you could be punishable by death, by imprisonment for life, without parole, or by imprisonment for life, with the possibility of parole.
That is the judge in Georgia just a few hours ago reading the charges to 14-year-old Colt Gray, who is now charged with four counts of felony murder. And in fact, he could face the death penalty because, unlike a lot of liberal states in America, in Georgia, if you commit the kind of crime that Colt Gray is accused of committing, you could actually be put to death for that crime. Now, even though this jury, the trial is likely to come years from now, and the final verdict and final appeals probably years after that, do I think that Georgia would put a 14-year-old or a 16-year-old to death? Not likely. Should they lock him up for life in prison? Absolutely, as far as I'm concerned. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails, and I'll do that in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, I'm going to put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. So what do we know today about the shooting in Georgia that took four lives at Appalachee High School in Winder, Georgia? Here's what we know. We know that the FBI investigated Colt Gray, that they investigated him in May of last year. So it was not a long time ago. He was 13 years of age at the time. He was in middle school at the time. And the FBI, and we can't tell whether it was the FBI or local law enforcement that actually went to his home and questioned him and questioned his dad about alleged threats alleged to have been made by Colt Gray, the young man who is now charged with murder, four counts of murder, who was being investigated 15 months ago for making threats, allegedly, to shoot up a middle school, his middle school. So what happened when the police went to his home? Well, first, they talked to his father and they asked him specifically about weapons and whether or not they were available to his son, Colt Gray. This is Colin Gray.
You have weapons in the house?
I do.
Are they accessible to him?
They are. I mean, there's nothing loaded, but they are down.
Okay.
We do a lot of shooting. We do a lot of deer hunting. He shot his first deer this year. I'm trying to teach him about firearms and safety and how to do it all and get him interested in the outdoors,
mm-hmm.
like on my phone.
Get him away from the video game.
He's exactly right. He knows the seriousness of weapons and what they can do and how to use them and not use them. So it's kind of a... It's kind of a little bit of a shock.
Now, what he's referring to there, the idea that the police or the FBI would come to his home and say, we believe that your son may have been making threats to shoot up his school, even though dad, as he explained to the police in that interview, police or FBI, whichever it was, that it was a shock to him, the idea that he'd been teaching his kid about guns, about gun safety, about the appropriate use of guns. All of that sounds just fine. But then the question is, but what about these threats that Colt Gray was alleged to have made to shoot up his middle school? Listen to that response.
I know, and I'm telling you right now, we talk about it quite a bit.
Okay.
All the school shootings, things that happen.
Yeah,
all, hey, are you getting picked on at school? He is. He's getting picked on at school, and is everything okay? That's why I keep going up there.
Yeah.
You know, because you never really know, and I don't want anything to happen to him. So
he didn't want anything to happen to his son, but let me tell you this. It sounds, by all accounts, so far, what little we know about Colt Gray, about his father, about his mother, about the whole family situation, that Colt Gray was in one heck of a mess at home because he had a mother who had a long criminal record. She apparently had a drug addiction problem. There were neighbors who said the kids would be routinely locked out of the house by mom and would be banging on the door saying, Mom, Mom, let us into the house. It sounds like a horrific childhood. And lately, his extended family, especially his aunt, have been sounding off saying this boy was crying out for help. Now, what I always wonder when a family member says a child was crying out for help, well, if you knew that at the time, what did you do to help? It also makes me wonder what teachers knew about, because every single state in America has a mandatory reporting law. Now, usually it comes about when there are allegations of, say, sexual abuse against a child. But the mandatory reporting laws in all 50 states, 58 if you're an Obama fan, say that if a teacher, counselor, principal, school official, nurse, doctor, police officer even suspects that there is any kind of abuse of a child, that that teacher or other people mentioned in the mandatory reporting law, that they are required to report it. Not if they're dead certain that it's going on, not if they're sure that a child is being abused, but if they even suspect abuse. Now, did any of the teachers at his school report that? That this kid is getting abused at school, he may be getting abused at home. We don't know that one at this point, but you wonder, almost every bad thing that happens in our society, we hear why somebody was crying out for help. Well, did anybody listen to the person? And in any case, no matter how much you may be crying out for help, does it ever justify what is alleged against Colt Gray today? And that is the murder of four people, the wounding of nine people, the injuries to 30 people that happened in Georgia this week. Then the police or FBI talked to Colt Gray. This is Colt Gray 1 year and 3 months ago speaking to law enforcement about the allegations of threats that he was alleged to have made, and they were investigating in May of last year. This is the young man who today is charged with four counts of murder. He's going to be tried as an adult. He could go to prison. He could go to death row. Listen to how he answered the police.
And I'm not trying to get anybody hemmed up, but like, this is some serious stuff.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, he knows how serious it is, trust me.
So I just want to make sure you understand that if something like that happened or you hear something like that, report it.
Yeah,
tell your dad, tell teacher.
Yeah, like I told him, I promise I would never say something.
And you're saying you didn't say anything like that?
No, the only thing I have is TikTok, but I just go around there and watch some videos.
Okay.
Just.
All right, well, fair enough. He's just going to do a little report saying that pretty much what we've done in reference to this and that we talked and you saying that you didn't say anything like that. And I got to take you at your word, and I hope you're being honest with me.
Yes.
I'm not saying you're lying, but it's...
It's
not unusual for people to lie to police.
It's not unusual for people to lie to police. Now, we don't know today if he was lying back then or not. What we do know is what he's accused of, what witnesses at the school saw him doing. Because remember, in this case, I don't think it's going to be a tough legal case to make. He was caught with the gun. And when a school resource officer confronted him face to face, an armed officer, Colt Gray apparently immediately put the gun down and gave himself up. Well, 7 months after the conversation you just heard, that's audio from that investigation May of last year, 7 months after that FBI investigation, Colin Gray admits he gave his son an AR-15 for Christmas, which was later used in the alleged crimes at Appalachian High School in Georgia. And at that point, I got to mention this. Kamala Harris is running for president of the United States. God knows where she stands on the issues. She's not answering questions right now. But this is her attitude towards school cops and school discipline from her 2019 presidential campaign.
Again, what we need to do about taking, demilitarizing our schools and taking police officers out of schools. We need to deal with the reality and speak the truth about the inequities.
Yeah, I got to tell you something. Wouldn't you love to know what Kamala Harris says today? 5 years ago, Vice President Harris, you advocated for taking all cops out of all schools in America. Is that still your stance today with four people dead in Georgia? Glad to get your calls. 866-439-5277. Naysayers always go first and tell Alexa to play the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Can't fix stupid.
Stupid is forever.
But you surely can boot them up. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'll get back to your phone calls and emails here in just a moment. Now, I hope that George Beebe allows me a little latitude on this, because, Mr. Beebe, it's always great to have you on the show. Former director of the CIA's Russia Analysis Department, former Russia advisor to Vice President Cheney, and currently director of Grand Strategy at the Quincy Institute. Are we going to have to go through one more go-around with the Russia, Russia, Russia nonsense? That I thought the Democrats had worn this thing out a long time ago. So should we believe the reports that the Justice Department says Russia's out there trying to influence our election? Or do you think there's something else going on here?
Well, it's hard to sort through all this, because this is, on the one hand, an important issue, protecting the integrity of our elections. And there's no doubt that other countries do try to influence our elections. It's not just the Russians. A lot of countries try to do this. And it is the job of the U.S. government to make sure that they can't succeed in all that. So that's a part of this. The other part of this, though, is the degree to which this issue is exploited for domestic political purposes, trying to create a climate of suspicion and mistrust, trying to call into question whether a particular candidate is somehow beholden or sympathetic to a foreign actor. And we went through all of this with Russiagate. It turned out that there was a kernel of truth in the accusations that were levied back then, but it was grossly exaggerated. The degree to which it affected the elections was quite minimal, actually. And the hysteria that it generated and the degree to which it tied our country up into knots were widely disproportionate to the actual threat that this posed. So we've got to be careful about this time.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think I'm putting in the wrong context if I say the last time with Russiagate, we had a multi-billion dollar presidential campaign, and the kernel of truth, the Russians' involvement, was a couple of $100,000 worth of Facebook ads for the most part?
Yeah, I think that's about right. Unsurprisingly, the ability of a campaign of that size to really sway public opinion, you know, was extraordinarily small. And I think that holds true today. Certainly, any effort to affect the integrity of the election process is a real threat. Threats to, you know, casting of votes and tallying of votes. We need to make sure that nobody is putting a thumb on the scales in those areas. The degree to which the Russians can actually change people's opinions on a big enough scale to really affect voter opinions and the outcome of the votes, I think is extraordinarily limited. There's not a lot that anyone can do. And believe me, the candidates try to do this. Their campaigns try to do this. They have a hard time, even with the massive efforts that they're engaged in. So to think that the Russians can spend a few million dollars and sway people's views like this is pretty hard to believe.
Well, the other thing I'm worried about, Mr. Beebe, and this is an honest worry, is that the Biden regime, which has benefited from hoaxes before, and Hillary Clinton benefited, and I think Barack Obama benefited as well, that they'll use it as a justification saying, well, because we know Russia's trying to, you know, we say they're trying to foreign malign influence of campaigns, that we'll use that as a justification to shut down real information that Americans have a right to know. And I'm not talking out of school, because the excuse of Russian disinformation was used to silence what was a pretty damning piece of evidence against the current president, Joe Biden, when the media, 51 former intelligence officials and the FBI and everybody else said, oh, it's that laptop, that Hunter Biden laptop is Russian disinformation. They knew that if the public knew what we now know was on that laptop at the time, there were polls right after the election saying, if you'd read the story in the New York Post, would you have changed your vote? And there were Democrats, a sizable percentage of them, who said, yeah, I would have. Except they'll use this excuse saying Russia's messing around with our information, social media and otherwise, and we're going to use that as an excuse to do the same kind of thing this time, just to different kinds of information, because the laptop's already out of the bag.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. I think this is a real danger. And the government should not put itself in a position of being the arbiter of what is true and what is not true. What is information that's accurate and what is disinformation that is not, and therefore should not be exposed to the American voters. I think the American voters are pretty smart. They can figure out for themselves what they believe based on evaluating the information that's out there. And it's a very dangerous thing for the government to step in and say, you know, no, we're going to tell you what is disinformation and determine whether you can have access to this or not. That's not the role that the U.S. government ought to be in. And it's certainly true that the U.S. intelligence community should not in some way be injecting itself into domestic political affairs. It's entirely inappropriate for them to do that.
I'm talking to George Beebe. He's currently director of grand strategy at the Quincy Institute. I want your comment on what you make of what sounds like rank hypocrisy when the U.S. says, oh, my God, foreign countries are trying to affect our election. And you say, yeah, because the U.S. government has never tried to influence the outcome of an election in Israel or elections in Ukraine for during Maidan or just before the Maidan Revolution or any of those things. We don't try to mess with anybody else's elections. I mean, in some ways, while I don't want foreign countries messing with America's elections, the fact that our government and players within our government, including Obama, including Clinton and others, have messed with, it sounds like, a lot of other people's elections, but say our elections are off limits. Can you comment on that, please?
Well, on the one hand, there's no government in the world that I think could survive scrutiny when it comes to looking for hypocrisy. They're all guilty of this to one degree or another, and the U.S. is not an exception there. But the other thing I would say is, if we're really going to make a persuasive case to other governments that they need to refrain from efforts to affect American domestic political affairs, we're going to have to acknowledge that they're going to demand that we do the same thing in their political affairs. We're going to have to be very pragmatic about this. If we take the position that it's perfectly okay for us to weigh in on their political affairs and inside their states, we should expect that our protests about their activities are not going to resonate very strongly with them.
I just love the moral chest beating about Russia. And then you say, oh, but what about the 12 CIA outlets that were established along the Russian border in Ukraine prior to the war? What about those? Oh, well, we're the good guys, so we're allowed to do that. The bad guys are not allowed to do it. It just really stinks. And maybe we need an agreement with our own government. You won't let others mess with our elections, but you will not mess with the elections of other countries, including allies like Israel. And for all I know, I don't know if they've messed around with elections in Germany or France or England or other places.
Well, it's not a bad place to start.
Yeah, well, we could have that agreement if we could just get a government that actually served the people. George Beebe is the former director of the CIA's Russia Analysis Department, former Russia advisor to Vice President Cheney, and currently director of grand strategy at Quincy Institute. George, thank you very much. It's First Amendment Friday. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll get to your phone calls and your emails in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Coming up next on the Radio Northwest Network, labor unions destroyed one of Portland's major shipping terminals, and now Governor Kotek is proposing to spend tens of millions of your dollars to subsidize that terminal to bring it back, and she's inviting the unions. Well, the...
Senator John Kennedy gets it.
Mr. President, you just got to try harder not to suck.
Well said, Mr. Kennedy. We agree. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Let me bring you one small correction. We ran a soundbite of the judge talking to Colt Gray, the young man who is accused of four murders in Georgia this week at Appalachian High School. And the judge had told Colt Gray, you face the possibility of life with parole, life without parole, and possibly the death sentence. We ran that soundbite because that's what the judge said. He apparently has brought Colt Gray back up and informed him that in Georgia they do not give the death penalty to juveniles, and so that piece of information is corrected, and I'm glad we got that corrected. So thank you for that. It's First Amendment Friday. Glad to be with you and always glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. Before I go to your calls, I got a good naysayer coming up. I want to mention this segment is brought to you by NickShivers.com. For an instant offer to sell your home immediately, no showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date, NickShivers.com for details. Now, if you listen to this show, you know that I'm not the biggest fan of unions. I was once forced to be in a union. I got out as fast as I could, took part in decertifying a union bargaining unit. I'm not a fan, but if you want to belong to one, that's fine. But I'll tell you this. Governor Tina Kotek is doing something that is so colossally stupid, you can't believe it. Now, Portland is named Portland because it's a port city. That and the, they lost the coin flip for Boston, which would have been the other name they might have used. But there are a number of terminals, one of them in particular, Terminal 6, where they used to unload thousands and thousands of containers from ships so that if somebody wanted to ship something into the Northwest or out of the Northwest and they didn't want to go to the ports of Seattle or Tacoma, they could send the ships. And people say, well, it's a long ways up that river. Actually, from the ocean to the port of Seattle is almost as long a trip on water once you leave the ocean and enter Puget Sound as it is take the trip up the river. I've had some ship captains point that out to me. But Terminal 6 got destroyed by the Longshoremen Union. And what they had decided to do, they made an issue. They were their members enjoyed hundreds of thousands of dollars in paychecks every week, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they destroyed that terminal. They waged a war against the terminal operator, a private company, ICETSI, I think it was. And the terminal operator finally told the Port of Portland, we can't do business here. And because the delays and all the other activities of the union are causing the people who come here with their ships and their cargo to go elsewhere. So we can't make a profit here. We're going to leave. The ships left. And, of course, the union jobs went away. They do a little bit of container traffic through Terminal 6 right now, but not much. In fact, they do so little that Terminal 6 has been losing $13 million every year to keep it operating just so you can get some shipments in and out. Well, now Governor Tina Kotek has said she wants to take $40 million in taxpayer money and basically just shovel it into Terminal 6 to see if she can bring it back to life. This was reported by the Portland Business Journal. But what I loved best about it was they said, plus, Tina Kotek is talking to the unions about how they can increase efficiency at Terminal 6. So do I think that this is basically just a big gift to the unions? Yes. Do I think it's going to bring back Terminal 6? No. Do I think if Terminal 6 came back with a different port operator, if you could get an operator to come in and operate Terminal 6, if you could get the cargo container ships to start coming back, do I think that would work? I don't. Do I think it's a colossal waste of taxpayer money? Absolutely right. Let's go to naysayer Todd. Hey, Todd, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just had a naysay with you where you had said earlier your ultimate safeguard is a jury of 12 against bad DAs and things like that. And that used to be, but not anymore with Democrat juries. We just convicted Trump on 35 felonies for bookkeeping. I mean, we've had him convicted of no proof of E.G. Carroll's time. So if you go, that safeguard's been thrown out quite a while ago now by the Democratic Party. If you're a Republican going in a deeply Democrat area to trial, I mean, you have the same odds as you would in Moscow in a trial as an American.
You don't have it. If you've been watching those cases as I have, Todd, what do almost all the legal experts say is going to happen to both of those cases on appeal?
Well, they'll be thrown out, but the punishment is the process.
I understand.
Going to take your money.
And some people sit in jail for years.
And then
I understand that you can't.
Paul Manafort
but here's the alternative, because you're talking about the fact that the law in Georgia says that if this father put the firearm in the hands of his son and did not safeguard it, then he bears some responsibility. If the alternate is, well, we can't trust juries and we can't trust prosecutors, so therefore, what should we do with a parent who did what the parents in Michigan did, buy a gun for a dangerous kid, and then ignore him and leave the gun available to him, and people end up dead? What should we do?
I'm not arguing the point that there should be, but when you're saying the safeguard is the jury system, the jury system, like everything, is now being completely destroyed by the Democratic Party. And that's one of the great wrongs of our country going on right now, is that we have a system that used to work very well to safeguard people, but now people just go in and go, oh, I like E.G. Carroll and I hate Trump. I don't even know what year she said it happened. And yes, she loved him on The Apprentice by her tweets, but I hate Trump, so I'm going to. And he's going to have to post $100 million to go to trial.
I don't disagree with you. And in that case,
it should have
had a, And by the way, can I give you one little update that just popped today? In the case of the Hush Money trial, Judge Mershon, Mershon's daughter runs a PR firm. Do you know who just hired Judge Mershon's daughter's PR firm to work on her campaign?
Let me guess, Kamala Harris?
You got it right the first time. Thanks, Todd.
The Lars Larson Show.
To First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Happy Friday.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
You're a lime dog faced pony soldier.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Crank that speaker.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's my favorite day of the week, First Amendment Friday, and I think we've got a burner of an X-Bull today. Should parents who place guns in the hands of juvenile killers face charges as well? My answer to that is yes. I know there are practical problems with it, but it's actually happening in Georgia right now after the murder of four people at Appalachia High School. Colt Gray, accused of four counts of murder. He will not face the death penalty. A judge had misspoken and said that he would, but the judge later corrected himself. But now his father has been charged as well. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. In those rare circumstances where there's a case to be made, the father was already on notice that the police or the FBI suspected that his son had made threats against his middle school. Was it the right thing to do to let him have unfettered access to firearms? I don't think so. And now he's facing manslaughter charges. So you can answer the poll at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Joe Kent joins me now. And Joe, of course, is going to be, I'm confident, the winner of the 3rd Congressional District race to replace Democrat Marie Perez. Joe, welcome back.
Hey, Lars, great to be with you.
Joe is the retired Special Forces Warrant Officer and the widower of fallen Senior Navy Chief Shannon Kent, who was murdered by ISIS, and he is running against Marie Perez, who's, I guess Marie Perez is right at the center of a firefight in her own party about whether or not to shut the government down to avoid, and this, it's so bizarre, it takes some explanation. There's a bill that would say, that to states, you have to make sure that people voting in presidential elections are American citizens, which is, it's already the law, it's common sense, and the Democrats are so steadfast about opposing that, that they're apparently willing to shut the government down, and so far, she has voted for the SAVE Act, which is kind of unusual. I think she's one of seven Democrats or so, but now her own party is putting the squeeze to her, saying, no, you've got to vote against the SAVE Act. I wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, Perez knows that she's in a conservative district. President Trump's won this district twice. So she's doing everything she can to make it look like she's a moderate. She voted to leave the border wide open. She voted to actually give non-American citizens, illegals included, representation in the government by letting the census count people who are not American citizens. So allowing House of Representatives seats and Electoral College votes to go to non-American citizens. She voted for that. And then the first time the SAVE Act came up procedurally, she voted with the Democrats to kill the bill in the crib. As she approaches an election, she's voted for the SAVE Act once. So like you said, now she is between a rock and a hard place. Her party's doing everything they can to prevent the SAVE Act from being passed, and they're attempting to get the budget passed without the SAVE Act. So I'm not exactly sure what Perez is going to do. I think she's going to continue to try and make it look like she is a moderate. But her votes prior to this really indicate what will happen if she keeps the seat and if Hakeem Jeffries becomes the Speaker of the House, because we're only a few votes away from that happening. She will vote to allow illegals to vote in our election. She'll vote to keep the border open. All the policies that she's trying to run from now, that's exactly what will happen if we don't flip this seat.
And that is the long-term result. But short-term, what do you see her doing if she sticks with this and says she's voting to say, somebody has to prove that he or she is an American citizen to be able to vote. It's the right vote to make, but she's only doing it, as you suggest, I believe, for political purposes, to try and convince her conservative district that she's a moderate. And but if she caves on this, she not only votes against American voters, but she's also going to be a flip-flopper, which is never admired in politics, although it's done all the time.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say. She's going to need all the money she can get from the Democrats to win this seat. She's got plenty of money in the bank. So she may, you know, just have to take the vote along party lines with the Democrats. Or maybe they're going to release her and let her and the other four or five Democrats that are in Trump districts right now vote with the Republicans. But again, look, this is all just theater. We know where her heart lies. All of her votes previously have been for the open border and to give illegals representation in Congress. So it's hard to say exactly what Marie Perez will do, but we have to hold her feet to the fire for her voting record thus far. The reason why we're in such a bad state right now is because she's gone along with the Biden and Harris policies up to this point.
Hey, Joe, I want to ask you about what happened in Georgia this week. What's your take on that whole situation and about all the things we're finding out about both the accused shooter and his father?
Well, I certainly agree with you that we need to hold these parents accountable when their kids get access to firearms. But look, what never gets addressed here is what's going on with these young school shooters. I mean, what is taking place in their heads? What medications are they being put on? I'd really love to see if this kid was on any kind of SSRIs, on the Adderall, those types of drugs. We're medicating our kids at a horrible rate. And so really this speaks to, I think, the mental health crisis. People have talked about, you know, is this kid, has he been influenced by the transgender ideology? I don't know if that's confirmed, but we know that was obviously at place in the Nashville shooting. I think we really need to look at what the actual causes are of this, because the Democrats are going to all blame the guns, but guns have been around for a very long time in our country. These school shootings are relatively new, so there's clearly something that's wrong, and I think the medication and how medicated our children are and how much money the pharmaceutical industry is making off of medicating our kids, I think that's something that we absolutely have to study and to address really soon.
You know, I agree with you, Joe, because this is a couple of years ago, so the number isn't brand new, but there was a number I saw that kind of surprised me. Great Britain and the United States are fairly similar culturally and economically and otherwise. I'm told that America uses, Adderall and these other things to supposedly address ADHD, which some kids do need some medication for it, but we apparently use it at about six times the rate that our cultural cousin Great Britain does, and it makes me wonder, why are we using it six times as much on kids as somebody like Great Britain does?
Exactly. That's a great question. And honestly, I think this is pretty easy, though. You just follow the money. You look at how much money the pharmaceutical industry is making off of these types of drugs. And so I think it becomes the go-to with our medical system, where the answer is always to write a prescription for something. If the kids are having a hard time in school, well, there's Adderall, there's Ritalin, whatever the case may be. Kids are depressed, maybe probably because they're spending too much time on social media. You know, the answer is to put them on some kind of an SSRI, and we have no idea what these drugs are doing to these young minds. And so I think it's just absolutely tragic. And, you know, going after Big Pharma and fixing these key issues, it's something that President Trump is addressing right now with RFK Jr., and I think this is really important.
Apparently HHS is beside it. Joe, HHS is beside itself thinking if RFK Jr. becomes the Secretary of Health and Human Services, apparently they're going bananas back there. Oh, my God, you can't put him there. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic. I mean, because the things that he is talking about, it affects our entire society, the whole movement to make America healthy again, and that goes against all of the moneyed interest in, you know, the health and human services and in the pharmaceutical industrial complex as well. So these are things that we must address, and I'm really glad RFK Jr. is on board and we're addressing these things as a political movement.
You bet. That's Joe Kent. He's going to win 3rd Congressional District. You do not want Marie Perez. At least that's my recommendation. Glad to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. Coming up in a moment, Donald Trump talks about what Kamala Harris isn't talking about, the American economy.
Reminder.
You are in control.
Our Constitution is a document in which we, the people, tell the government what it is allowed to do.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And now Kamala wants to give them food stamps, housing assistance, welfare, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and destroy all of those programs. You will destroy those programs.
That is Donald Trump, of course, talking about some of the major issues that, of course, Kamala Harris is not talking about. In fact, she did a couple of radio interviews this week, but she has been amazingly off the radar. She did her first interview in 38 days last week, and she hasn't been saying much more after that. Of course, she's got the debate next Tuesday. The only thing is, a lot of us are wondering if she's going to suddenly catch COVID or have a bad hair night or something and just not show up for the debate on Tuesday night. Glad to be with you. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you want to vote in our Twitter poll or X poll, you can find it at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. See, there couldn't be a more definitive difference between two political candidates. I think in American history, there's never been a presidential race in which one candidate is so diametrically opposed to everything that is represented by the other. And in fact, Donald Trump is saying, let's drill, baby, drill. And he doesn't want a ban on fracking. Well, now all of a sudden, Kamala Harris doesn't want a ban on fracking. Donald Trump says we shouldn't have income taxes on tip income. And a couple of months later, Kamala Harris adopts the same position. But the problem is, with the left-wing Democrat Party, you can't exactly become Trump 2.0 as a Democrat and stay as a Democrat candidate. So she can't adopt everything he's doing. But take this example of a difference between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris is part of the Biden-Harris regime that has been running America for 3.5 years, that has invited illegal aliens in for 3.5 years, that has brought in 12 to 15 million illegal aliens. And when they arrive, bus ticket, plane ticket, benefits card, cash card, a hotel room, medical care, food, all kinds of things. And yet this is the stance Donald Trump takes on those illegal aliens.
That is why I will ask Congress to pass legislation barring all taxpayer-funded benefits to illegal aliens. And by the way, when you do that, they won't come. They're coming now because they realize they've never seen wealth like this. They're getting things that they could never get. They're coming for that reason. If you stop that, you'll be dropping the flow by 80%.
Now, do you ever think that you're going to hear Kamala Harris, vice president now, candidate for the Democrat Party, chosen without a single American voter taking part in that choice? Do you think she'd ever take the position that illegal aliens should be denied all public benefits? Because I think that's the right position. I don't think Kamala Harris, she may be willing to say no tax on tips. She may be willing to say, forget about that stuff I said about a ban on fracking. I'm not for that anymore. She is not going to stand up and say, I'm going to deny benefits to illegal aliens. And yet think about that in concept. We have a country where the federal government is broke. We are $35 trillion in debt, hundreds of trillions of dollars of obligations to Social Security, Medicare, and the rest. And would she ever say, hey, maybe we shouldn't be paying for all the illegals? No, she's not going to take that position. And then there's this. I've seen Kamala Harris try to answer a question about inflation. And you know what she does? She does something. There's not an English word for it. But if you went to your doctor and said, doctor, I've got the flu. I feel horrible. I spend half the day on the toilet. And your doctor said, wow. And you say to your doctor, what should I do about that? And the doctor says, well, I'll bet you're congested. And I'll bet you're in the bathroom a lot. And I'll bet you feel lousy. If all your doctor ever did when you went to him with a problem was repeat back the symptoms of the problem, and yet that's exactly what Kamala Harris does. You say, what are you going to do about inflation? And she says, well, let's start with this. Inflation is where the price of everything goes up. And so bread goes up and gasoline. It's like you want to just interrupt her in the middle and say, we already know what the problem is. Don't sit there and describe the problem. Tell us what you're going to do about it. Listen to Donald Trump.
My plan will rapidly defeat inflation, quickly bring down prices, and reignite explosive economic growth. Kamala Harris will take more money out of American pockets. My plan will leave the typical family with many thousands of dollars more than they have right now.
And by the way, how would he do that? Reduce taxes, reduce regulations. There's an estimate that says that in 3.5 years, the Biden-Harris regime has added about $1 trillion in new regulation costs to American business. And if you say, well, that's business has to pay for that. Oh, folks, if you aren't awake and paying attention, you understand that every time you increase the cost of doing business, the businesses pass that cost on to you and me. So if you want it lower, you don't pass a law that says, you know, make the business sell for less. That's what Kamala Harris wants to do. She wants to dictate prices. She wants to, you know, say that all these corporations are just gouging. No, if you actually look at the economic indicators, they're not gouging. That their prices, the cost of doing business has gone up, and they brought their prices up at almost exactly the same rate. And then there's the question of tariffs, because, look, I'm not the biggest fan of tariffs either. And when Donald Trump imposed some tariffs, I said, I don't like tariffs by the U.S. government. But Trump talks about tariffs not as something you slap on and then collect for the next couple of decades to put more money in the government's pocket. You use it as a tool to get what is best for this country. Listen.
Well, one of the things that we have with tariffs is that I'll say to them, you don't honor the dollar as your world currency. Is that right? You're not going to do it? No, we're not. I said, that's okay. I'm going to put tariffs all over your product. And they're going to say, sir, we'd love to honor the dollar as the world currency. You know, tariffs, in addition to monetary and the money that we'll take in, which will be bigger than you've ever seen in this country before, give you tremendous political power for something like that, as an example. I stopped wars with the threat of tariffs.
That's how you use it. You use it as a tool to do what's best for America. Now, have you ever heard Kamala Harris talk about that? I don't think so. Let's go to Monica. Hey, Monica, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I wanted to comment. Just whenever I can tolerate, you know, just little bits of Kamala Harris speaking. And by the way, you did hit the nail on the head with the doctor anthology. And yes, is annoying. I'm like, your point is, well, especially when she starts her laughing and not smiling, I just look owing for the little lizard or the snake tongue to flick out of her mouth. Right?
That's a punchy metaphor too.
Yeah. And a question, how on earth can Donald Trump be sentenced when, I mean, I'm going to say win because I do have faith he's going to win, but how on earth is it possible to be sentenced by then?
Judge has put the sentence, if you're talking about the same case, the judge has put the sentencing up, but there's, I think, a second agenda going on. Judge Merchan has a brand new problem. And that is, he oversaw a case involving Donald Trump. His daughter made a lot of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars, working as an advertising agent, PR firm, and other for Democrat candidates. So he had a dog in the fight, she had a dog in the fight, and now it turns out the Kamala Harris campaign hired the PR firm run by Judge Merchan's daughter. That's a hard conflict of interest.
The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on my favorite day of the week, First Amendment Friday. All the phone lines are open. Every subject is fair game. And as always, naysayers go to the head of the line. If you want to dial in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, we put you first at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Vote in our X poll. That has to do with the case in Georgia. Should parents who put guns in the hands of juvenile killers face charges themselves? I'd vote yes in that. You can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Sean Carney is CEO and president of 40 Days for Life. Sean, welcome back.
Good to be back. Thanks for having me.
I'm not going to ask you the ex-poll question today because that's not in your lane unless you want to comment on it. But I want to ask you about IVF, in vitro fertilization, because this one's become kind of a thorny issue. And I think the thorns go beyond the obvious. Do you want people to have more babies? Sure. Do you want the taxpayers to pay for it? Yeah, probably not. Do you want the leftover embryos to be treated like human beings, or do you want them to be treated like medical trash? No, although the Democrats are thrilled about the whole prospect. So help me set this in context, and where does this sit as we head up to next week's debate?
Well, politically, I think it's a non-issue because both candidates support IVF. I'm Catholic, so I oppose IVF, and we can talk about that if you want. But like,
sure,
Trump supports IVF. So the whole like Waltz coming out and saying I had kids through IVF, even though he didn't, he made that up,
UIU or some other. It basically had to put his sperm on steroids, so there was enough of it to get things going. I guess I'm not a doctor, so I don't use medical descriptions. So, but that's the closest I can come.
Right. But I don't understand it. Here's what I think about the IVF thing that we've heard about the last few weeks. Kamala has nothing to run on. Her interview was kind of a joke. She didn't mention any specifics except child tax credit. Like that's what she was going to do on day one. And they always retreat to IVF. Trump is for IVF. A lot of pro-lifers are saying, you don't need to be public about that. We certainly don't need to be paying for it federally. That's so stupid.
And that was one of the side issues I wanted to ask you about, but go ahead.
Yeah, it's so dumb. He's just like, trying to be pro-IVF Kamala, and it's unnecessary. It's not a legitimate issue in this campaign because no one's against it. They're all for it. And most Americans are for it. So I don't understand. There's really no controversy. It's just the fact that Kamala has nothing else to run on, so she's sort of propping this up. And so I see it dying a lot like the other things that she's been bringing up lately.
Well, you've already said I'm Protestant, you're Catholic. You're against. Explain the theological reasoning behind why you'd be against saying this woman and this man can't have, you know, babies the normal way, so we're going to figure out a way to implant an embryo in mom, and we'll deal with the not treating human beings like medical trash, even if they're embryos. We can deal with that secondarily, but why are the Catholics against it?
Yeah, you said it yourself. We're not going to create a baby the normal way. The normal way is the natural way, and the Catholic Church's teaching is that you can't create people outside of the marital act. And that's just human nature. It's from Thomas Aquinas. It's from all of Christianity until 70 years ago. And so, you know, you just can't make people. The other thing that you get into with IVF is you don't get to make a baby and have a baby. You'll make 8 babies and one will survive. And the rest will either be frozen or discarded. And that brings in the ethical debate against IVF. And a lot of couples say that they basically paid tens of thousands of dollars to create 6 children, 6 embryos, and have them discarded. And none of them survived. And so it's got the Brave New World feel to it. It's everything wrong with genetic engineering. And eventually my fear is we'll get to the point where we're going to try to create the perfect child.
No, I think that don't you think that's already happening where they, as they say, well, we want some embryos, but pick a good one, you know, and pick one that'll be tall and smart and good looking. And oh, by the way, we'd like a boy or we'd like a girl. Yeah. All of that stuff. I mean, it fits right in with a whole Democrat universe of choice, you know, that it's your choice. Discard those old ones. They weren't very good. But what do we do? Go ahead.
I do have a lot of friends that are like, look, or a few friends, I'll say. They're like, I don't believe in God, but the Catholic Church's teaching on IVF makes sense to me. Like, just sort of from the 1984 standpoint. So I do think, you know, as a Protestant, you should say, well, every blind squirrel will find a nut every now and then. But, you know, it does make sense. And I think everybody's uncomfortable with it. They just won't admit it.
Well, I mean, I guess I could start. Well, I could get into a long discussion with you about Onan and a few other things out of the book that might run against the normal way of making babies, because that's at least one example of it. But that's something else.
Onan was killed. Onan got killed. Yeah, we won't.
Yeah, because he wouldn't impregnate his sister-in-law or widowed sister-in-law. Yeah, it gets really complicated. But is there a way? And here's the other concern I've got, Sean, and that is. As much as, I mean, I have some acquaintances who've had kids through IVF. Okay, fine. Am I right in suspecting that IVF is going to become the go-to for every single gay couple, gay or lesbian couple that wants to have kids, and probably even trans as well?
100%. That's not a prediction. That's happening now.
Right. And then they're going to say, and the government, meaning the taxpayers, should pay for it. So you got one objection that's moral and say, hold on, should we? It's one thing to say this man and this woman can't have babies for whatever reason. He's, it's either her or him or a combination of the two can't have babies. We'll help them make a baby because that would be the normal thing for a married couple to do. But now we're going to make a baby for two guys, and we're going to make a baby for two girls, and we're going to have the taxpayers pay for it. So two levels of objection. Should we be doing any of that at all? Should we be allowing anybody to do it? And should the taxpayers pay for it?
And what every good, God-fearing Southern Baptist who supports IVF should know is that you cannot unring that bell. And that is happening. We are making children a commodity via gay couples adopting some kid that they want to have blonde hair and blue eyes. And that is one of the many, many reasons wrong with IVF. But my point is, this isn't a political issue. Trump's for IVF. Kamala's for IVF. It's like, next question. Now, he's making a mistake by putting emphasis on it because he's embarrassed somehow of his unbelievable, great, awesome pro-life record. But he doesn't need to get into this. I think you'll see him get away from IVF as we get more into September and October. But it's just unnecessary politically.
Well, and the other one that I would like to throw in, because you and I have talked about this, haven't we? The IVF anchor babies. This is what happened. And it's happening mostly from Chinese, mostly well-heeled Chinese, who are saying, hey, we'd like an anchor baby. So they call up a clinic in Los Angeles or San Francisco, and they say, can you find us a surrogate, and then find us, an embryo, leftover embryo somewhere, throw it in the surrogate, call us up in 9 months, we'll come pick up our brand new American citizen that you just manufactured for us, we'll take him back or her back to China, and then in about 18 years, our son or daughter, now an American citizen, by current interpretation, misinterpretation, the 14th Amendment, can bring us back to America. And that's happening right now. You talked about it being a commodity. There are Chinese and other mostly Asian couples who are simply ordering up an embryo, ordering up a carrier, and saying, make it happen, call us when the baby is fully baked. And they're doing that right now to manufacture American citizens. So it has implications for illegal aliens as well. That's Sean Carney, CEO and president of 40 Days for Life. Sean, thanks very much. Back in a moment. It's First Amendment Friday. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
Lots of folks worry about their firearms, but Lars doesn't have to worry about Biden taking his guns. He stores them upstairs. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Big Iron Ore is here.
Welcome back to the program. This segment of the show brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialist, Oregon Medical Centers. Our X-Pool today has to do with the shooting and the deaths of four people at Appalachia High School in Georgia this week. Should parents who place guns in the hands of juvenile killers face charges as well? Well, the father of Colt Gray, the 14-year-old who's charged with four counts of murder in the shooting this week at that Georgia high school, the father is charged as well. He's charged with manslaughter because he allowed the gun into the hands of a juvenile killer. It very much seems like the case that was decided in Michigan this year, where two parents were found guilty and sent to prison for the murders that were committed by their son with a gun that they bought for him And even though they were alerted by the school to problems with their son, they never once apparently volunteered up the information. By the way, we bought him a gun, and we don't know where that gun is right now. So should parents who put the guns in the hands of juvenile killers face charges as well? My answer to that is yes. I'm getting a certain amount of blowback from that, but that's okay. That comes with the territory. Today's Expo is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let's go to Ron in Tacoma, listening on the great KVI. Hey, Ron, what's on your mind today?
Well, you know, I heard overnight that apparently the FBI says that this kid was on their radar. Now, maybe you can...
Yeah, they interviewed him about more than a year ago, and we've been talking about that today.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I don't know exactly what being on the radar means. If it seems like a lot of people are on the FBI's radar, we're always talking about it after people get killed.
Well, but Ron, hold on. Just so people don't get the wrong impression, we might often say the FBI had their eye on somebody. In this case, they got a report that somebody, and it was identified the suspect was Colt Gray, 1 year ago when he was 13 years old, had been making threats to shoot up his middle school because he was 13 at the time. They or representatives of the FBI went to interview both Colt Gray and his father in May of last year. So he's more than just on their radar. They'd heard a tip. But just like in Parkland, Florida, where they got a tip ahead of time about the killer who ended up murdering 17 people, the FBI completely blew the case and ignored the warning signs they got and didn't do their job. And they did it again, it appears, in Georgia.
Yeah, and then they want to take everybody else's rights away in the country. That's just marvelous. And here's the other thing, Lars. I know you can't really get into it at the moment, but I have all kinds of pictures that are hitting my Facebook today, which shows this shooter that you're saying is under 15 years old.
He's 14.
Got his hair bleach blonde with dark roots under it. You know, like somebody in their 20s would do. And I'm seeing reports that this kid's trans, and I wouldn't be a bit surprised if we found that out by Monday.
Ron, I saw the same reports. It appears that he apparently had a fascination with both the transgender killer from Nashville that you might remember and also with the shooting that happened in Parkland High. I've also seen reports that there were kids at his school who would yell gay at him as a slur. But whether or not he was trans or not, I don't believe there's been anything definitive that would tell you one way or the other. Thank you for the call, by the way. Let's go to Dee. Hey, Dee, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. Thanks for having my call. Really appreciate you and all that you're doing, holding the line. I'm calling today because I was walking our neighborhood. I live in Portland, and we came across this house. That's the only house that's right now displaying anything regarding the election. And, of course, it was for Kamala. And I noticed the slogan on the sign. It said, Kamala Harris, let's finish the job. 2024.
Whoa.
I just laughed out loud, and I couldn't believe it. Like, it's actually in the air. She wants to finish what Joe Biden started, and to me, that's just dismantling America as we know it. And I just love to hear your thoughts on that. I mean, to me, I have not seen anything from that camp that would show one thing that is solid about what they're for, other than maybe fighting amongst ourselves.
Well,
under the banner of maybe
my take on that is Kamala Harris. I mean, I don't feel any sympathy for her, but she has a terrible situation. It's like looking at somebody saying, you're really in a world of hurt right now because you've got an America in which you participated in the destruction of many of the institutions in this country, the destruction of the military, the destruction of the budget, the destruction of a lot of things. You know, Joe managed to take mortgage rates from 2.65% to almost triple that number in 3 years. I mean, it's hard to imagine, you know, taking mortgage rates up, inflation up, real wages down, the economy in a shambles, you know, and 100 other things. And then you say, let's finish the job, because I think she and her friends have calculated the only way to win this is to tell everybody everything that's been done in the last 3.5 years is fantastic. It's great. You know, we couldn't have a better situation. Now, what's funny is the other day, about almost 2 weeks ago, when she gave that speech on economics, she came out and she bemoaned the idea. She said, well, people are having a hard time buying the necessities of life, like bread and milk and eggs. And then within 90 seconds, she says, but Bidenomics has created a great economy. And I thought, how in the world are you telling people you can barely afford to buy breakfast or lunch, but boy, isn't the economy going great? She has no other choice, because what else is she going to say? We just screwed up the country. Let me finish screwing it up, because that's what she's doing. Dee, thanks for the call.
The Lars Larson.